This is a paid message from GoFundMe. Meet Juan Naula. When his son was hospitalized for a viral infection, Juan started a GoFundMe to pay for medical expenses.
It was $5,000 to pay the bill for my son, and I needed only 22 hours. It was amazing. People really trust on GoFundMe.
How did Juan raise $5,000 in less than a day? He posted a short video on GoFundMe, telling his story in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Be specific, be quick, and tell what are you going to be using the funds for. I was nervous to do it because it doesn't feel okay to ask money, but you shouldn't be nervous. Sometimes you just have to do it and see the results. We were able to save my son's life. Thanks to GoFundMe that we still have my son with us.
Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This message reflects one person's experience.
Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for parenting. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Afternoon,
Sean.
Right. The first question now, the person who sent it in sent in a much longer version, and we have kind of edited it down just for reading it on air. But for the person who sent it in, Joanna has read the entire text. My eldest is 19. We routinely checked his phone when he got it at 13, and we knew his passwords, etc. There were two occasions which worried us. Both times we sat down with him openly, were able to talk about the situations to help him navigate while assuring him of our love no matter what. However, our issue is that now, as he's 19 and an adult, his phone is out of bounds for us. My gut feeling is that he is quite secretive about it, and as in more than just private. He shares a room with a sibling, so his phone is not allowed upstairs when going to sleep. When he broke this rule and I questioned it, he said he forgot, but quickly snapped the phone out of my hand to turn it off before giving it back to me to bring downstairs. He recently broke the rule again, and when I gave him the opportunity to come clean, his immediate response was to lie straight to my face. This is a common occurrence, followed by him basically telling me that his phone is none of my business, with my response being, "You live in my house." I really want to trust him, and I do in every other respect. However, I'm really worried that he might get himself into trouble. He also recently contacted his biological father, with whom he has never had a substantial relationship. Myself and my husband, my eldest son's stepdad, who has been in his life since he was 2 and legally adopted him many years ago, have always supported this and we're available available for whatever he needs. How do we treat him like an adult when he continues to lie and break our trust? And what consequences can we put in place that won't further alienate him?
Oh, it's a lot. And as you said, that is a summation of a more detailed with more examples of what this parent is talking about. The one thing just to kind of go back to, though, is that piece where you were like, you know, he's broken the rule again, gave him the opportunity to come clean. He chose to lie in that moment. And in this, there's a little bit of, it's a common occurrence that he will lie to my face, but I do trust him in every other aspect. And I'm going, no.
Yeah,
they can't coexist.
Yeah.
If he's lying at every opportunity to your face, and just the overall tone, and he's 19, but that wariness about, is he safe on his phone, both for himself and others, is he staying safe? You don't trust him. And that's not a criticism, because there may well, and I think in the longer letter we see there is more context to that.
Yeah.
But just don't kind of say to yourself, of course I trust him, except for these 5, 6, 7 aspects that I don't trust. Cumulatively, you don't trust him. The other thing, Sean, that really jumps out at me as you're reading this is, it's so great that this parent said he's 19, because it sounds like you're reading a much younger child.
Yeah.
Like, this sounds like 14, 15 year old. And I'm always curious about that, because if he is genuinely so emotionally immature still, has anyone at any point of his development ever raised a question around that or brought it up to, you know, I'm thinking parent-teacher meetings in school, things like that, where they're like, oh, you know, he's quite immature. Has that ever come up? As parents, have you ever felt that? Or perhaps what we're reading, Sean, is a parent who still sees a 19-year-old as a much younger child and is parenting them as if they were still 14, 15, which can happen because he's sharing a room with his other sibling. Who may be in and around that age. But just those, that really jumps out at me. And I would say, look, yes to therapy. I think that, you know, the idea that would he benefit from going to counselling or psychotherapy? I would say yes. However, he's 19 and so he has to want to go.
Yeah.
At least be curious to go. And on that, you know, I think it's worth saying because 19, I know technically and legally and all of that, they're adults. But what I work with a lot of that age group, 19, 20, 21, 22 even, their mothers are still making their appointments. Their parents are still paying for their therapy. Their parents are emailing me if they're sick or not going to attend. It's not unusual for somebody that, I'm not saying that's great, by the way. And one of the tasks we'd be working on is to make sure that they become more responsible for their own appointments. But it's not unusual. So I think if you give your 19-year-old a nudge towards it and say, look, that would be great for you. There's a few websites or numbers or go do that for yourself. The chances of him following through are pretty low, let's be honest, especially when it was a parent's suggestion to do so. So I think just be very mindful of that. If he would agree to go three times to try it out and you'd set it up for him, it would be the job of the therapist then to build that connection with him so that he would come back of his own volition, put it that way. I do think as well, there's a couple of other things in this where you need to think about. When you say, how do I consequence my 19-year-old, it jars with me slightly, you know, and I think it should. And I think that's why you're asking it. Because when we're talking about adult children, and in this instance, young adult children, which is anyone up to, let's say, mid-20s, okay? But they're living at home. They're still dependent on you financially and, let's face it, in most other ways as well.
Yeah, he's going to college, this fella.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, it seems quite reluctantly, you know, not always really wanting to go to college. And again, you have to think, did he want to go to college, Sean? Is that something parents felt he should do because he's at that stage of development and it'll be good for him in the long run? He does sound like a kid who might have done better getting a job for a year or two. Any job.
Trying out
the real world, bit of responsibility, structure, having to get up, having to turn up, deal with a boss. Might have given him a little bit more of the maturity that just feels like it's missing here. But when it comes to parenting young adult children, you have to move yourself out of, for want of a better term, I'm going to use some business language, from manager to consultant. Okay. You've really got to make a shift in your parenting because he's right. You know, he's snapping his phone out of your hands. It's my phone. It's none of your business. I'm not showing it to you. That's actually okay. And it doesn't immediately mean, unless there's lots of cause to consider, it does mean it, that there's loads of secrets on this phone. It's simply, I want privacy. And I don't think any of us as adults would willingly hand our phones over to another adult and say, go, I'll scroll away through that. It's private. And I think it's a clumsy way of asserting privacy for him to grab it out of your hands, but it's still there. So if you become more of a consultant than manager, you're really thinking about things like natural consequences for a behavior. So that would be not getting out of bed in the morning. That you're not up there hounding him and, oh my God, you're late and you've missed the train and I'll drive you in. You're not doing that. Not getting up in the morning, not responding to the alarm clock or whatever it is, means missing college. Consistently missing college means failing college. And failing college means you don't get to go anymore.
Yeah.
And now you have to do something else. Natural consequences. Not you going, come on, put this on. Where's your coat? Where is this? There's a cup of tea for the road. If you keep doing that and he keeps leaning into that behavior that elicits those responses from you, it's partly on you as parents.
Yeah. Whoa, that's a hard one to do, though.
It's really hard, but you've got to, because like college is, it's, you know, that's a privileged thing to be able to do and to go to. Yeah. And honestly, unless a young person has chosen the course they want to do, is invested in the outcome of going to college and getting a degree, they're just treading water for a few years. And whose desire is it that they're there? I do think if he doesn't have a job, at least a part-time job, look, I'm talking to you now, the second week of Easter holidays, at third level students have all of 3 weeks left in term time when they go back and maybe some exams. It's a long summer. Hopefully there's a job in the mix. And I do think that that's something, opportunities to practice real meaningful independence, adult independence in the world, getting up and out to a job, sustaining a job, being responsible for the money that comes in. Yes, you can encourage him to save, but you know, if they're like, oh my God, I don't want him with all that disposable income, because fundamentally we don't trust him.
Yeah.
That's the bigger question. I also think along with those kind of how do you consequence is that you need to talk to him about what's going on. Look, you are 19. I don't want to be on your back as if you were 14. I don't want to have to parent you that way. But I do need you to do your bit as well. If you feel you could talk to him in that manner, I think it would be helpful. But there's a lot going on for this young man as well in reconnecting with his biological father and what that might mean for him and bring up for him in terms of identity. And he's at that stage of development as well. So, and I do think, and we've talked about this before, that transition from secondary school into third level is a very difficult transition for many young people to make. And a high number of them really, really stumble their way through this first year of college before they find their feet. So it may be a maturity issue, but I suppose I have a question, Sean, about if it really is his maturity, why is he so immature emotionally at the age of 19? And might there be another reason for that?
Yeah. Getting him to go to a therapist, when certainly from this description, it seems to be, well, you're the problem, Mum. Everyone's on my case. I'm, you know, blameless in this. Could you kind of sell it as a, well, we're not getting on well at the moment and we all go to therapy together?
Of course you could.
Kind of a family thing.
Of course you could. You could also do it just, look, I'd like us to go together, the two of us. And you're asking for a therapist to do what is called a dyadic session, you know, where the relationship between two people is in the room and that's what you're working with. So not couples counselling, you know, but it's more the relationship. So we would do a lot of it with teenagers and their parents, young children and their parents, but also young adults and their parents, you know, to come in and actually work on, it's our relationship. We're getting on each other's nerves. We're having a lot of fights. We'd really like to think and talk and work through that in the presence of someone else who can help us to find new ways of communicating and connecting. And I think that is a handy way, because then even in the course of that, what can come up is, do you know, I think it would be useful for both of you if one of you came for six sessions on your own and then I saw the other one for 6 weeks. So it's still shared. And then we come back together and we have a think about that. So it can be explored in lots of ways. And if it would get him in the door that you go with him and it's not you're the issue, go get yourself sorted, even though I don't think that's what the parent is doing it to help him. I do get that. But if he was to hear it in a way that's more critical, it would definitely help to go with him.
Yeah. My boy is 5 and a half and started big school in September. Since then, I've noticed a massive change in his mood. He was a kind, thoughtful boy. I always thought he was a little too kind and soft. While there are still moments of this lovely boy, there are more tantrums than ever before. He's always had these sorts of tantrums, but they're becoming a lot more frequent. The tantrums will start from something very minor, like having to get dressed in the morning to getting out of an hour-long bath. The tantrums will usually last for an hour, and they will be screaming and repeating what he doesn't want to do, throwing his toys and hitting me. This has well and truly drained me, and I often get pains in my chest and stomach. I'm reaching out because I feel like I've tried every kind of support or reassurance and even punishment, like no TV, toys taken away for a day, that he is damaged, but nothing seems to be helping. I'd be extremely grateful for your advice or opinions.
Oh, gosh, there's a lot. And immediately when you've tried everything for him, I'm just wondering, you know, that I hope this parent has support for themselves as well, because that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of I'm dealing with. I'm the bearing the brunt of this. And I just hope that there is somebody in your life that is supporting you around this, because that's very hard. And I think what's interesting is this little guy is, you know, he's described as this kind, thoughtful boy, you know, maybe a little bit too kind. Is he too soft starting school? But then there's also a mention that about tantrums, and that he's always had these sort of tantrums. Yes, they're more frequent, but they've always been there. Now, he's still only 5 and a half-ish, maybe approaching six now, because he started school in September. But when the tantrum is described, it doesn't sound like a tantrum to me. It sounds like a meltdown. And those are different things. I know the terms are often used interchangeably, but they're like a tantrum is a developmental thing. Toddlers will do it, not might. They absolutely will.
Yes.
It is a performance. It needs to have a witness. You have displeased me. I will show you my displeasure physically and very loudly.
Yeah.
And it feels interminable when you're in it, but it's probably in the minutes more than the hour long episodes.
Yeah.
This to me is sounding like something that's much more out of control. The screaming, repeating the same thing. I don't want to, I don't want to, I'm not going to. Repeating, repeating, and throwing toys, including his own toys, because they're getting damaged in the process. That sounds more like a meltdown. That comes from being so sensorially in your nervous system, overwhelmed, overstimulated, that you cannot be regulated back down, ergo you melt down. Mm. So it doesn't matter if there's 10 people in the room or there's nobody in the room, I'm out of control. And in that out of control feeling, I'm throwing, not to consciously hurt you, but to release tension in my own body, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I know parents might be going, oh no, they've got great aim and they definitely get me, but that's not my primary motivation. It's not, how will you be target practice for me today? Yeah. It's not that. It's, I am flailing, I need to throw, I need to fling. In my own clinic, I have what I call frustration toys. It's safe to throw them because kids come in and sometimes they really need to throw something. And instead of going, don't throw, your hands are not for throwing and all of that, I'm like, well, you can throw cotton balls, you can throw a foam brick I have. It's a frustration brick. It looks like a brick, but yeah, it's not going to break anything. Foam bats, having things that enable, you know, the throwing or the release of tension in that very physical way can be helpful. And it might be something to think about. We're coming into that kind of spring, summer season where a lot of, you know, foam bats and play things come out, pool noodles, that type of stuff, come out at this time of year. And you can, he's not allowed to hit you, of course, but he can hit the floor, he can hit the arm of a chair, he can hit a cushion, something that releases some of that tension in his body. I do think I would be talking to the teacher. It's Easter break, obviously, at the moment, but straight after Easter break, because the parent-teacher meetings are quite a while ago for primary school.
Yeah.
And so initially, that lovely kid, everything's great, you know, but now it's later in the year. Get a sense of how he's doing now in school, in the class, in the yard, and with pals. Okay, you want to get a whole picture, but do not be surprised if the school tell you he's wonderful. We've no issues. He's great.
Okay.
Because it may be that he's using all of his resources to be really good in school and to contain all of the frustrations and the buildup of tension. And then he's exhaling that loudly and physically when he gets home. That's quite common. Mm. And any time that I hear two versions of the same child, like the school saying they're great and the parents saying, oh my God, I'm broken with everything that's going on, I'm like, okay, I believe both of you. But now I'm curious about, why is this child working so hard in one area to be good that they have nothing left in the rest of their day? Also ensure lots of movement. So after school, if you're lucky enough to be in a place where he can walk home from school, make the walk interesting. Walks are not interesting for kids, so make them interesting. Like when we see a red car, we're going to do three big jumps. When we see a bike, we're going to hop on one leg for five hops. Doing it in a way that's bringing in lots of movement, balance and playfulness on the way home. Or having a little color chart and he has to find something red, something blue, something green, just to have that kind of engagement with the environment as he's moving his way home. Big play break when he gets in. I wouldn't be worried about homework and stuff. First of all, he's only in junior infants, but that's not your priority. Getting him to work through the stresses and tensions of his day, that's the priority.
Yeah.
And just getting some feelings, talk and play going with him. So that could be lying him down on a big piece of paper, like an art roll or wallpaper lining, and drawing his whole body with a marker, tracing, and giving him lots of colours and saying what colour is angry, what colour is happy, what colour is scared, what colour is uh-oh feelings, all kinds of excited feelings that you can put in there, and have him colour in his body where all those feelings live. And while doing that, talking to him about, can you tell me a time when you felt that feeling? Mm. Can you tell me a time? And he's getting that picture of, I'm a kid made up of lots of feelings, not just one. I'm not the angry kid in our house. I'm a child who's sometimes angry.
Yeah.
And I'm sometimes happy, and I'm sometimes scared, and I'm sometimes excited. And it's just helping him develop an emotional language. So I just think there's a bit more finding out about what's going on in school and how they're experiencing him to help you better understand and respond to what you're seeing at home.
Yeah. It sounds like, though, he's finding the experience of school overwhelming.
Absolutely agree. But it doesn't mean the school are seeing him overwhelmed.
Yes.
Yeah. It could be that that overwhelm is only coming out when he gets home.
Yeah.
And that's very hard, because a parent can feel very alone with that.
Yeah. The poor little fella.
Ah, yeah, really. It's a lot. It's a lot.
It is a lot. Joanna, thanks a million as ever. Joanna Ford.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2:00. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.